The Heart of Danger, Part 2, Terror from Space, Chapter 14, Electric Life. With senses alert, the party hastened through the ruins of the city. As Ciceron indicated the direction in which the sphere was located, their eyes picked out the path of least resistance and followed it. They skirted fallen pillars and climbed over piles of rubble. "It's become stationary," said the leader of the party, drawing in air with an effort. She gasped to inhale and added, "And it is sending no data. It's just stopped." No one had breath enough to answer. After a time, Ciceron called a halt. The others stood in a circle around her, panting and waiting for her orders. "We'll catch our breath here," Ciceron said. Her words were punctuated with gasps. "The sphere is just ahead, on the other side of that wall." Zip drew upon his training to calm himself, breathe slowly and deeply, and recover his breath quickly. He brought himself back to normal before the others. "Still stationary? Still quiet?" he asked. Ciceron nodded. When all were able to breathe normally, Ciceron led the way across a tumble of slabs of stone and around a wall half in ruin. Gingerly, she stepped around a corner and peered into an alcove where shadows were deep. With her laser pistol out, she led the way into the alcove. The front wall had fallen into rubble, but the supporting walls on either side of the chamber and most of the roof was still in place. "It's here," stated Ciceron. She stepped over a broken lintel into the dimness of the chamber. The black and silver globe lay on top of a severely dented metal table. A stone had fallen from the roof onto the table and distorted it. One leg was broken and the table teetered to one side. A sunbeam came through the opening left by the fallen tile, emphasizing by contrast the gloom inside the alcove. Ciceron's entrance into the space stirred up stone dust whose motes rode the eddies in the air and glittered whenever they passed through the sunbeam. Zip followed the Amanian into the chamber, and Raphon Dorn came after him. The starman's eyes quickly adjusted to the dimness. He stared briefly at the sphere and then scanned the rest of the room with his eyes narrowed. Various pieces of machinery, broken and long unusable, were situated along two of the walls, with debris littering the floor. "Let me see," said Jack. "Let me see the machines." Almost distractedly, Zip reached up to his shoulder pack and removed it. He set it down on one of the counters where Jack released himself. With no apparent threat in sight, the party relaxed its guard somewhat. Employing various apparatus, they took visuals and examined the ruined equipment. Ciceron provided a report to those aboard Tharsis. All at once, Jack spoke up. "These machines very old," he said. "Made by people who lived here long time ago. All dead now." When Jack said all dead now, Zip thought, "I wonder if he means the machines or the people. Both, I suppose. Both true, anyhow." "Let me see sphere, Zip," said Jack. "Sure, Jack," said the starman. He picked up the small figure and placed him on the slanted table where the sphere was. When Jack touched it, the orb beeped once or twice, then crackled as if it were engaging in speech made of static. After a cursory examination, Jack said, "This device is artificially intelligent machine. It is wandering recorder for unfriendly terrain. It explores following own commands. When it finds something important, it run back here to give data. Run quickly. This place is central data gathering place. All machines broken long time. This sphere has much information inside, I guess, but no one to give information to. Now it wait here many years. No one to send it out. No one to want data. It still works because it moves. If something strange happens, it learns and goes to find something out. Then it come back here to give report. it wait for machines here to read its data and tell it something new to do. But no machines talk to it now. No machines talk for a long time. Zip was delighted when he heard Jack's report. Did you hear that? This sphere is filled with information, information about strange things that happened in its territory. Yes, indeed, I heard it, Zip, said Ciceron with solid satisfaction. Many thanks, Jack. We will take this sphere back to Ocean. Can you disable its mobility? I think if we take it back by wormhole transfer, its reactions would be unpredictable. Yes, Ciceron, I fix it so it cannot move. When Jack had completed his task, Raphon Dorn took possession of the sphere. The party began to pick its way slowly back the way it had come. About halfway through the debris of the fallen city, Ciceron gasped, Mara! Her head shot up and she began to search the sky to the west, her eyes large with apprehension. A huge flying animal. Its curlionora is massive. Hide! In seconds, the party had disappeared to casual observation. Zip gripped his laser rifle and looked in the direction Ciceron had indicated. He didn't have long to wait. A flying beast, beautifully aerodynamic, glided into view from over the dark forest and sailed over the fringes of the city. It flapped massive leathery wings only once in a while, coasting in between flaps. Passing by, it continued along the boundary of the eastern forest and the yellow desert until it disappeared from sight. Zip watched admiringly as it became a dark speck against the brooding red sun. It is electric animal, said Jack. I think it is electric. Zip was shocked. Do you mean it's a machine? No, Zip, it is animal. It eat electricity. I've got it recorded, stated Raphon Dorn. We will see what our scientists have to say about it. Visual, spectrograph, infrared, I've got it all. The tall man replaced his recorder in its pack. Shall we get back home? Suggested Ciceron. As soon as the landing party had returned safely to Tharsos, Raphon Dorn hurried with the sphere into one of the laboratories and began to examine the data. Zip and Ciceron visited one of the refractories for a leisurely snack, then moved to one of the lounges where the other three starmen and several Amanians, including Plera, were waiting to hear about their foray to the planet's surface. Before the conversation had got very far along, Raphon Dorn bustled in to join them, his eyes alight with excitement. He carried a small tray with some food on it. Fascinating, fascinating data, he announced. Have a seat, offered Joe, getting up and waving the newcomer to a central position. The Amanian sat down happily. You've got it analyzed already? Expressed Zip with amazement. Got answers to my most pressing inquiries, but there's lots more to learn, of course. That little sphere has centuries worth of data. It'll take me many days to extract its treasures. But I learned something about that flying beast, the one that Jack said eats electricity. What kind of an animal eats electricity? Asked Joe, marveling. Electricity in the form of lightning has influenced both the flora and fauna of the planet, so that they draw on the charge as a form of bioenergy. The electricity supplies the plants and animals with some interesting luminous capability. They can generate electricity that can then energize the neon in their bodies or in the surrounding air. We do not know whether the animals are hostile or can be. But if there are other landing parties, they will want to know that there may be a shock hazard if the creatures can generate voltage high enough to energize the neon in the local atmosphere. Neon is an inert element, of course, contributed Plera, but it can combine with a number of elements to form compounds. That there is only one storm raging now appears to be unusual. There is evidence of severe electrical storm activity on the surface. The planet is more often than not undergoing many storms. Raphon Dorn said quite right. Both the abundance of neon and frequent discharge of electricity have made for some interesting life forms. A ripple of amazement went through the crowd. Raphon Dorn took a bite of some cubed sustenance on his plate and followed it with a sip from the drink he had brought into the lounge. He was enjoying his place as the bringer of intriguing news. "The trees and other flora do appear to breathe out oxygen," he continued. "Most of it in compounds, but they breathe in the various compounds of neon. The lightning so common in the storms hits the ground and is sucked up by the plants. After each flash, perhaps they glow a bit brighter, but I'm not certain about that yet. When electricity passes through neon, it gives off an orange-red glow. In the locale we visited, although the plants contain chlorophyll, it does not seem to be central or maybe even necessary for plant growth. The leaves on the trees are larger by proportion than we would expect, and in the red sunlight appear very dark, even black." In his amazement, the Amanian was speaking rapidly. Having been awakened from suspension only recently, Raphon Dorn was not overly fluent in English. As he tried to speak rapidly in his excitement, his words were beginning to blur. He paused and made an effort to slow down. "Further, being electrical in nature, the flora have more metal than the plants of Earth or Amania. In some places on the planet below, the plants are actually metallic in color, silver, gold, or copper. As our landing party saw in the plants on the edge of the desert, some have lots of long, thin spikes. Should be a pretty sight when they glow at night." Mark got a look of intense concentration on his face. "I remember something about an Earth scientist who tried to grow plants by electricity. It was more than 2 centuries ago. Now, what was his name?" "Ibn Adar," stated Zip. "An old eccentric with unlimited resources that allowed him to pursue his own research independently. He was a genius who did a lot more than grow plants with electricity. Eventually he mellowed, wrote a book, and shared his remarkable achievements with the scientific world. No one followed up on his experiments, however." Zip smiled wistfully. "He'd have loved visiting this planet." "Will there be another landing?" asked one of the Amanians. "That will be up to Kerax, I guess," answered Ciceron. "The data Raphon Dorn brought back will tell us a lot about the biology of the planet, but we have high hopes that the sphere will teach us what we need to know about the Xenobot's presence in this star system. And from that information, let's hope we'll learn how to capture their solar power station," said Zip grimly. 3 days later, the first official report was made regarding the data gleaned from the captured sphere. Raphon Dorn, who'd been the chief researcher, addressed a council made up of Kerax, Plera, Stephen Hoshino, the 4 starmen, and a few others. Tachyon detectors had been discerned in the Xenobot base, so real-time transmission with the humans and Amanian leadership in the solar system was restricted to communications between Tharsos and the solar system in order to avoid the risk of detection. Transmissions between Tharsos and any landing party would be conducted solely by radio. The leftovers from an ample but plain breakfast had been cleared away. The group sat at a round table on which a pot of coffee lay within easy reach of the humans. Joe was drinking coffee, but wishing he had a pot of Dejarling tea instead. He hadn't had any since this trip had begun. He had a few packages of the tea in his quarters and reminded himself to bring one out. "Very well," said Kerax. "We are ready, Raphon Dorn. You may make your report." "With probability approaching certainty," began Raphon Dorn, "the ruined cities on the Neon planet are former habitations of the Xenobots. That is, the planet below was not the home of a native race that the Xenobots conquered and annihilated, but rather an empty planet that the Xenobots simply took over and colonized. It appears that at that time they were more advanced than they are now. They manufactured the sphere we brought to Ocean. For reasons I have not discovered yet, they abandoned this planet after a stay of perhaps a millennium, at which time there was a major cataclysm of some kind. I wonder if there was a war between different Xenobot factions, Whatever the story, the planet was uninhabited before the Xenobots came, and became uninhabited again after they departed. Eons later, Xenobots returned to the planet and established the minimal presence we now see. This certainly alters our assumption, said Hoshino. If not to conquer another race, why did they establish a solar power station? The history you outline does not indicate a need for such a move. I do not know, answered Raphon Dorn. If not for conquest or exploration of any civilization in this planetary system, perhaps as a way station, an experiment, or some other purpose. Whatever their motivation, the solar station does exist and is indisputably connected with the base on the planet. The data in the sphere revealed that the Xenobot presence and presumably the establishment of the solar power station began roughly 3,000 years ago. Hoshino rubbed his jaw. Joe, who was sitting next to the brilliant astrophysicist, could hear the rasp of his hand over slight stubble. The scientist had not yet shaved that day, unusual in one who was noted for fastidiousness. Raphon Dorn, with an occasional contribution from Ciceron, who had assisted him in the research, provided additional information and answered the infrequent question. However, nothing more of significance was added to the account other than the reminder that the Xenobot base was equipped with tachyon detectors. Discussion ensued with no concrete plan emerging. Then Dr. Hoshino spoke up. I need information about the solar power station, he said emphatically. To approach it directly, even with a non-substantial probe, may announce our presence in a disastrous fashion. Yet we must have data before we can plan how to take possession of this vital Xenobot artifact. I surmise that a surreptitious inveiglement into the Xenobot base below can locate a link to the solar station in a much safer way than a frontal approach to the station itself. I have a plan. Conversation died down, and all fixed their eyes on the Earthman. The electrically charged atmosphere of this planet can easily provide a cloak for microelectric activity. We can create a series of intelligent machines about the size of my thumb. These could be sent into enemy territory disguised as native insects or whatever small life exists below. They will be designed to gather information directly from the Xenobot base by tapping into their computer networks and downloading information. Since the Amanians have archived much history, we know how to interpret many Xenobot files. Raphon Dorn nodded. This is a good idea. It is very practical in an atmosphere so rife with wild electricity. Could Jack and Jill assist you with their production? Hoshino pursed his lips. Indeed they could, he said animatedly. Thanks for the suggestion. But these intelligent machines could not be controlled from Ocean, contributed Pleera. Any link between here and the surface in the proximity of the Xenobot base would not be difficult for them to detect and trace. We would have to establish a command post on the surface with a radio relay station, suggested Joe with enthusiasm. And I know just the folks who'd love to do it. We Starmen will go down there with Jack and Jill and operate the little spies. Why, it'll be like the dragonfly we made on Nix about 5 years ago. We've even got experience. It'll be a lot more complicated than that, Starman Taylor, said Dr. Hoshino. But the principle is indeed the same, and I think you're right. You're the people to take on this task. The physicist looked up and began to reason quietly as if to himself. We'll use a pseudo-random frequency shifter, of course, so the signal will appear to be only background noise. We can enter enemy territory and relay information, both visual and data feeds. With a little time and effort, we could even network the machines with each other so they can act as a unit. Why, I could... His voice trailed off. Kerex looked at each person round the table. Coffee's cold, said Joe, putting his mug down. We'll do it, said Kerex. We'll follow that plan. The mission will be to find a way to gain access to the solar power station through the Xenobot's own computer system without their becoming aware of it. If it is possible and we harvest sufficient information, we will then act quickly. We will snatch the power station and return to our solar system with the prize. Excitement ran around the table and animated discussion followed. By mid-morning, a solid and detailed plan had emerged. The landing party would consist of the 4 Starmen, the 2 Titanians, and Raphon Dorn. They would establish a command post in a thickly forested area several miles from the Xenobot base. A radio relay station would be set up in the ruined city where the landing party had first appeared, far from the Xenobot base and outside the range of their tachyon detectors. Once an hour, the command post would send a message to the relay station, which would then be transferred up to Tharsis. If any danger arose, the landing party would be lifted off the planet's surface by wormhole transfer, and, if necessary, the Xenobot base would be destroyed. The 7 members of the landing party would be equipped with food and supplies to last a month. The generous margin of time was established to free the landing party from any undue anxiety, although Dr. Hoshino thought they would be able to achieve their objective in a matter of a few days at the most, perhaps even hours. "A Mannion utility food for a month," moaned Joe. "More than anything else, the very thought of that will ensure that we'll be back after a day or two. I'll see to it that we have a delectation every night before the mission begins, noble Starman Taylor," teased Pleera. "It will please even you. But when you set up your command post, you'll dine on utility rations." With a wry smile, the beautiful Emanian wagged a long, slender finger. "Good energy and good nourishment, with nothing to slow you down." "Oh," said Joe, making a face. "Sounds terrible, but," he added, lightening up, "tell me more about the delectations." "A week or so, I think," said Stephen Hoshino. "I can have the little invaders ready in about a week." As was his custom and responsibility, before retiring that night he made contact with Earth via real-time transmission and provided an up-to-the-minute status report.